Chapter 44, How Christian and Big Tiger Were Honored in the Robber's Stronghold. When they rode through the gateway, Big Tiger and Christian thought they would only have to stand up in their stirrups to be able to look over the castle wall, so low did it seem. Two men were standing at the gate, one on each side, and they saluted Dumpignac with a kowtow. He returned the greeting, raising his clenched fists only to his breast, for he was not an ordinary robber chief, but a Kossuth, a prince of the line of Araptan. The gate, which was made of stout planks, stood open. Inside the low wall was a watchman's house, and a round tower of the same height stood beside it. On the platform, Christian noticed two machine guns covered with canvas. One flight of steps led up the hill, and the low walls ran along both sides of it. Grinning confidently, Thunderbolt told how the caravan leaders had to pay their tribute in the watchman's house. But they were glad to do it, he affirmed, in return for safe conduct and guidance, and Mr. Ma had been there yesterday. Saying this, he looked sideways at Christian and Big Tiger, but their faces betrayed nothing. "This is a magnificent castle," said Christian, to change the subject. "This fine palace exceeds all expectations," said Big Tiger. Up above, the real fortress wall, made of roughly plastered stone, began. It was higher than the little wall of the outworks, and there were narrow loopholes in it, a tremendous lot of them, right around. Here, too, the gate stood open, but the sentries carried naked swords with which they saluted. Behind the gateway, the ground was paved, and the clatter of the horses' hoofs resounded from the opposite wall. But it was not a spirit wall with open exit to both sides, as in Etzina. In Dumpignac's fortress, they were more concerned with defense than with spirits. The gateway turned sharply to the left. They rode through a narrow tunnel, which opened on broad ramps leading to the walls. A bastion, on top of which stood more machine guns and a light field piece, was rising close to the gateway. The space where they stood was separated from the inner courtyard of the castle by yet another wall. A narrow passageway appeared to lead to it, but once more a rectangular space was separated off. This one was large and full of life. In the fortress wall were iron rings at which stood rows of horses, probably 100. Above their heads ran the defense passage, but there was only one man on guard up there. He saluted Dumpignac and nodded to Christian and Big Tiger as if they were old acquaintances. "That's Mendo," said Thunderbolt. "He waited for you behind the Etzin goal, but as it was night, you didn't know what he looked like." Almost the whole of the north side of the square was occupied by a house even more solid in construction than the fortress wall itself. The walls were thick, as one could see from the few window openings and from the battlement, which was pierced with numerous loopholes. Young men and old emerged from the doorway, all wearing heavy riding boots and brightly colored Mongolian clothes. They surrounded the party, greeting them with loud exclamations. Dumpignac dismounted. "Come," cried Moonlight. "But our saddlebags," Christian reminded him. "Leave everything be," said Moonlight. He took Christian and Big Tiger each by a hand and led them through the ever-increasing circle of men who came running from all sides. They popped up on the battlement of the casemate, and many crowded the narrow edge of the lowest cliff on which the fortress and the square watchtower stood. "Look at the dog," cried some. "Never was a dog so black," cried others. "He must be a devil," said others again. Their way continued upward between windowless walls. It was cold and dark in the narrow passages, and there was a strong order of horses. Then a square opened before them. It was completely level, and right in the middle of it stood three snow-white yurts on round foundations of clay bricks. Two steps led up to the entrances. Without looking to right or left, Dumpignac went straight up to the middle tent, which had a blue felt top. He disappeared into it, and the sentries shut the wings with their left hands. Like the sentries at the gate, they carried heavy cavalry swords in their right hands. Moonlight stopped in front of the first tent. "This is the guest tent," he said. "The prince lives in the next one, and the third is for Thunderbolt, Damien Surin, and myself." "Who is Damien Surin?" asked Christian. "He commands the fortress when the prince and I are away. You will make his acquaintance." He opened the little door wings. The 12 animals representing the 12 months were carved on them, 6 on each, beginning with the tiger, the hare, and the dragon. Then came the snake. "Go ahead," urged Moonlight, pushing the boys before him. The last beams of daylight were pouring through the open smoke vent in broad streaks which were broken by the roof stays, giving the impression of the railings of a cage. The whole interior could be taken in at a glance. Dark Kashgar rugs lay on the floor. The fireplace in the center, as in all yurts, was swept clean, and a small fire was burning. 2 sheepskins spread opposite the entrance indicated the sleeping places, and that was all furnishing. Christian and Big Tiger hardly dared to step on the beautiful rugs, and after the first step they stopped, for they saw that on each of the sheepskins lay a blue Mongolian coat, a dark red silk scarf, an embroidered pouch with something in it, a pair of riding boots, and a magnificent new silk hat trimmed with gray fox fur. Behind Christian and Big Tiger stood Moonlight, enjoying it all. He was grinning from ear to ear, but when Christian turned round, he looked solemn and knelt down before him, holding a blue silk haddock in his hands. "Accept these worthless gifts from your friend Moonlight," he begged. Then Christian too knelt down, took the haddock, and raised it to his forehead, murmuring, "Thanks 10,000 times for measureless kindness." He felt about anxiously in his pocket, and to his intense relief, found 7 stars' beautiful sky-blue silk haddock, which he offered to Moonlight. "It is for both of us," he said, quickly laying it over Big Tiger's hands, too, "for we have got only one." Moonlight smiled and said, "I am unworthy of so great a gift. You embarrass me, sons of heroes." Then Big Tiger, too, received a haddock from him, as custom demanded. "I must go now," said Moonlight, "and I wish you a good night." As soon as Moonlight had left the tent, Christian and Big Tiger tried on the boots, first of all. "Much too big," said Christian. "No, they're right," said Big Tiger. "You must wear the stockings with them." "What stockings?" "Those there," said Big Tiger, pointing to 2 thick felt stockings, which looked like another pair of boots. They had to be pushed into the boots, and then the boots fitted perfectly and were beautifully warm. The red-edged tops of the felt stockings stuck out a bit over the decorated uppers. This kept the legs comfortable and protected them from getting chafed. Christian then wanted to try on the coat, but quickly desisted when a savage growling started outside. "Dog!" cried Big Tiger. "Be quiet," cried Christian, running to the door. The poodle was standing on the brick threshold, gnashing his teeth and looking as if he wanted to spring on 2 men who were standing some distance off, looking frightened. Christian seized him firmly by his black locks and then called out to the men, "You needn't be afraid." The 2 men entered, carrying the leather saddlebags, the saddles, the briefcase with the compass, and the horse blankets. "Do you think we'll soon get some food?" asked Christian when the men were gone. "The dog is hungry, too." "He's all right," said Big Tiger, opening a saddlebag. "We'll keep the cheese for traveling, but we'll give him the meat." And they gave him 2 big pieces of dried meat. The Mongols, who were watching them from the roof of the casemate opposite and from the battlements around, were laughing, but some of them shook their heads angrily. "That's not necessary," they shouted over. "I'm afraid we've done something wrong," said Christian. "It can't be helped," Big Tiger replied. "Now let's try on the coats." The coats were blue outside and seemed to be made of silk, for they had a dull shimmer. They were lined with a white lamb's wool and trimmed with gold braid. The high collars were yellow. The coats reached down to the boots, but when Christian and Big Tiger wound the red sashes round their waists, this raised them to just the right length. "Now for the pouches," said Christian, pushing his own into his sash. It was made of green silk with red edges and embroidered with lucky symbols. There was a slit in the center, and when Christian put his hand in, he found a silver snuff bottle. They tried the snuff. "This snuff," began Big Tiger, but he could say no more, for his eyes filled with tears. He could not even tell Christian how funny he looked. They both had to just sneeze and sneeze, so much so that the poodle started barking. "What on earth is this stuff good for?" asked Big Tiger, sitting down exhausted. "It will be grand in school," said Christian. "I'll save mine up for the arithmetic class." When they had recovered, they put on their fur hats and suddenly found themselves complete Mongols. As a final touch, they tucked their silver food bowls away in their coats. "You look like Bator," cried Christian. "Your ama would be flabbergasted," said Big Tiger, and he looked at the last rays of the sun which shone on the roof poles and the soot which hung from the roof in long threads. "Today is the first day of the new moon," he continued. "Just think, we only wanted to fly our kite." "Instead of being in school, here we are in a robber's fortress," said Christian, "and I didn't believe that there were still such things in the world." "Why didn't he want the ring?" asked Big Tiger thoughtfully. "After all, it belongs to him." "We must think that out," said Christian. But they hadn't time, for the door opened and two men entered. They wore round hats with a coral knob on top, from which hung a red silk cord. They held silver plates on their outstretched hands, and bending one knee said, "Please eat in peace." Christian and Big Tiger took the plates, but several more were brought, and Big Tiger at last protested, "We can't eat a whole lamb each." "You're our prince's honored guests," said the men. "Eat as much as you can. We shall be back again." Christian and Big Tiger ate heartily, but they saw at once that they could never finish the many courses, or even the lamb and the antelope meat. They took only a little of the fritters and just broke the top off the mountain of cheese. But they drank all the milk, which tasted both sour and sweet at the same time. After a while, one of the men came back and gave them more. "Any ubeno?" asked Christian. "Mare's milk," replied the man, and the red string of his ceremonial hat fell forward as he bowed. "But now you must begin to eat," he admonished them. Big Tiger and Christian looked at each other in wonder, but the man had disappeared. "I can't eat any more," said Christian. "We're like ants in front of the Wuchan Mountains," said Big Tiger. "It's getting dark," said Christian. "They won't see how much we leave." Evening had come on, and the yurt was darkening imperceptibly. A little bit of evening sky could be seen through the smoke vent, but it soon grew dim. The stars came out, and the two servants came back to the tent. "Thanks 10,000 times for a glorious meal," said Christian. "You lavish too much kindness on us," said Big Tiger. The men bowed in silence, and kneeling took the plates which Christian and Big Tiger handed to them. "Sleep well," they said, and one of them shut the smoke vent, leaving only a little peep of sky visible, as thin as the crescent moon. Before lying down to sleep, Christian and Big Tiger went out of the tent once more. The poodle lay at the foot of the steps, a water dish and a bowl beside him. He jumped up joyfully. "How are you?" asked Christian. "Are you an honored guest, too?" asked Big Tiger, stroking his head. Then they looked up at the darkening battlements, where a man was leaning against the breastwork. Down in the courtyard, the horses were pawing and champing. The steps of the sentinels could be heard, and in the distance, the howling of wolves. "They must have lost their way," said Christian. "Like ourselves," said Big Tiger. Christian sighed and waited for Big Tiger to say, "It can't be helped." But Big Tiger only stroked the poodle. "Do you think, Kui-chan," he asked, "that they're all like this?" "I wouldn't like to be the prince," replied Christian evasively. "Perhaps Naidong is right," said Big Tiger, "and he is only an unhappy man." They went back to the tent, and when they had covered themselves with the old coats, for the new ones seemed far too new and precious, they fell asleep. They were too tired to worry any more about being in a robber's castle. They had eaten and drunk, and now they slept. Moonlight, who opened the door a little later, shut it softly again. "They're asleep already," he reported to Dampignac. Next morning, the two men with the red silk hats appeared while it was still dark. They lit the fire and brought breakfast, which this time included a big can of milk. They also brought a can of hot water, two wet, hot cloths, and two towels. Christian and Big Tiger realized what they were meant to do, but they didn't take out their cake of soap. They just wiped their faces and hands with the wet cloths, dried them, and said, "Bolna." The men nodded comprehendingly. Just as Christian and Big Tiger were winding their sashes around their waists, in came Moonlight. "That's not the way to do it," he said. "Lend us your light in this difficult matter," Big Tiger requested. "Better two together," explained Moonlight, and he told Christian to press an end of the scarf against his body. "Now wheel round," he said, and while Christian revolved, he held the broad silk sash taut, letting it glide gradually through his hands. It ran in neat folds, and finally Moonlight tucked in the end. "That will hold," he said, with an air of satisfaction. Then he fixed Big Tiger's sash. When they both had on their new hats, Moonlight said, "I will now show you the castle. It was built to last for ages, but what of it? We may abandon it soon." They left the tent. The pale morning light promised a beautiful day. The watchtower was still in darkness, but the outlines of the fortress walls could be seen, and the light was coming through the loopholes from the east. They climbed up a ramp to the highest defense point of the fortress, which stood on a plateau of lowest cliffs that had been cut away to form steep walls. Above, there were more walls with loopholes surrounding a completely empty quadrangle. On the east side stood the watchtower, but it too was surrounded by walls, which were intended as the last place of retreat. Then they crossed the little inner courtyard and mounted a wooden staircase leading to the first floor of the watchtower. It was dark, and there were no windows. The only light came from a square opening above. A steep, shaky ladder led to the platform of the tower. Before mounting, Christian and Big Tiger slipped off their boots. They found themselves in the turret, which had four empty window openings. The guard greeted them. On the wall hung a gun and a brass horn. They were just in time to see the sun rising over the edge of the desert. Its fiery orb climbed out of the blue haze, bathing the desert, the gravelly plain, and the three hills in flaming radiance. The guard blew a long blast of his horn out of each window hole to north, south, east, and west. A new day had come. Looking down from the breastwork, Christian and Big Tiger could see the whole fortress below them, with its courtyards and fortification, which reached down into the valley. Water was being drawn from many wells, and horses were standing all around the walls. Men were going to and fro with pails and nosebags, and camels and horses were being driven out through the open gateways. "They're going to the big Darasen pasture, which is not far from here," Moonlight explained. They could also see, far below them, the big square where the three white yurts stood. The two men with the red silk hats were coming out of the one in which they had slept, carrying saddles and heavy, freshly filled saddlebags. "It's nearly time to start," said Moonlight solemnly. And while the boys slipped into their big Mongolian boots, he said, "I have to hurt you, I'm afraid. The dog must stay here and wait for good fortune." They were not prepared for this. "He's no ordinary dog," said Big Tiger sorrowfully. "Even extraordinary dogs bark when they should be quiet," Moonlight explained. "You must understand that." "It's hard to understand," said Christian, stroking the poodle. "He'll have a good time here," Moonlight assured them, taking each by a hand. The guards in front of Dampignac's tent dipped their swords in salute, opened the door wings, and Dampignac came forward to meet his guests. He was no longer clad as a monk. He had left off his red lama's cloak. When he saw the astonished faces of Christian and Big Tiger, he smiled. "Pray be seated," said Dampignac, but Christian and Big Tiger refused, murmuring, "After you," and "We do not dare," and Dampignac listened to them seriously. "My children," he said, "You are the first guests of this fortress who have come to me without fear. It is my wish to honor you." Christian and Big Tiger did not know what to do. They knelt down and said, "We are unworthy boys. Please forgive our disobedience." But Dumpinyak raised them to their feet and made them sit on two white panther skins. And as they had no alternative, they had to allow the venerable chief to bow the knee before them. "My friend Moonlight," he said, "who accompanies me everywhere, begged me to allow him to give you Mongolian clothes. So there's little for me to give. But please accept a small token of my friendship." While Dumpinyak said this, Moonlight laid two haddocks, thin as gossamer, over his hands, and on them he placed two silver-handled daggers with silver chain fastenings. "We do not dare," murmured Christian, "accept our thanks 10,000 times." "You squander your heart," said Big Tiger. "You are like the midday sun." The venerable chief sat down. "Before we go," he said, "please tell me how matters looked in Peking when you came away." "We really didn't notice there was a war on," answered Big Tiger. "We went out to fly our kite, and everything was as usual." "No one knew anything," said Christian. "Only when we came to Chichi Men Station, there were suddenly cannons and soldiers there. But the soldiers were in no humor for war. They simply ran away at the Nanku Pass," said Big Tiger. "And General Wu didn't have to fire any shots," said Christian. "He simply occupied the Great Wall because there was no enemy there." "He's taken Peking, and he got Tsin Tsin with one bold stroke," the venerable chief informed them. "I heard that from the telegraph people in Anxi." "General Wu Pei Fu will end the civil war, and there will be a beautiful peace," cried Big Tiger. The venerable chief said, "It is for that reason you are on this journey. You are messengers of peace. Do you know that?" "We did not know it," said Big Tiger. "We know it now," said Christian. The venerable chief groped slowly in the folds of his gray cloak and took out the thin volume pressed between two wooden boards. "You needn't be afraid," he said, smiling at Big Tiger. "The leaf of the sacred tree will not be destroyed." He untied the silken cord. On top lay a sealed envelope, and Big Tiger read the bold, painted inscription: "To the Most Venerable Governor Yang Tseng Tsin, Marshal of China, Governor of the Western Province, Xinjiang, Tiwa Fu." Christian also began to read, and when he came to "The Most Venerable Governor," Dumpinyak said to him, "As you, Compass Mountain, are the secret courier of General Wu, please take my letter also, and bend your knee on my behalf as you hand it to the Venerable Excellency. Be careful, my children, for a letter belonging to the robber chief Dumpinyak would bring danger on its bearers if it fell into the wrong hands." "I shall never again put my hand on my breast pocket," Christian vowed. "We shall be so secretive," said Big Tiger, "that we ourselves shall no longer know what others are not to know." Christian took the letter in both hands, raised it to his forehead, and then put it away where General Wu's letter had lain for the past month. "I admire my elder brother Wu," said Dumpinyak. "He is courageous and resourceful. The people cling to him as children to their father and mother, but he knows his limitations. He hates pomp, and he loves modesty. He is sending you to the great ruler, whom I also would wish to serve. My elder brother Wu could have found no more gifted messengers than you two." "We are of no account," objected Christian. "We deserve no consideration," said Big Tiger. "It does not often happen," continued Dumpinyak, "that the will of heaven is made so manifest." He opened the thin volume, which contained many blank pages, and two in the middle which were closely written on. A silken binding thread held them together. Between them lay a brown, dried sandalwood leaf. Dumpinyak lifted it out carefully, laid it aside, and tore the written pages out of the little book. It was then quite blank, and Dumpinyak laid the sacred leaf carefully back in the middle. Then he pressed the little book between the wooden plates, tied the red cord, and put the volume away in the folds of his cloak. Through you, said the venerable chief, I learned of the wisdom of Naidong, whom men call Picture Sheet. He withstood temptation in order to avoid evil. For me, there is no temptation. I know the place, and I know that gold and jewels put the world into confusion. You have reminded me of that fact while there was still time. Behold, for a second time, you will see an immeasurable treasure burned. He crumpled up the thin paper and threw it into the fire. It flared up, the black sheets curled, and as they fell to pieces, Dampignac stood up. We must ride now, he said. He stuck an old silver-handled dagger in his sash, and moonlight showed Christian and Big Tiger how to do the same. We three now wear the same daggers, said Dampignac. I got mine copied for you when Moonlight told me how bravely you had conquered the wolf. Without waiting for an answer, he walked rapidly out of the tent, and Moonlight followed him. As they passed the guest tent, Moonlight stopped and said, You need not be a bit uneasy about your dog. Nothing will happen to him, but you must tie him up now. Dog, come here, cried Christian. He put on the leather leash and fastened it to a ring in the foundation of the tent. Good fortune and affliction will be here in 4 days, said Moonlight. And Tolus, added Christian, tell your dog to guard your belongings well. And the pistol? Asked Christian. The pistol, too, said Moonlight. It's enough for me to have one. Dog, said Big Tiger, we're going now, and you mustn't be lonely for us. But the poodle didn't want to be left behind. He pulled on his leash, barked, and whined. Down in the courtyard, all the horses had disappeared except 4, which stood saddled. A tough-looking, thick-set man with a black mustache was holding 3 of them, and Thunderbolt was holding the brown stallion with light mane and tail. Dampignac mounted forthwith, and Moonlight had just time to introduce the boys to the stranger, who proved to be Damien Surin, warden of the fortress. Mount, said Damien Surin, I've picked the best horses for you. You needn't be frightened of them. They'll keep step with him. He meant Dampignac's stallion. Seya bona, Thunderbolt called after the venerable chief. Then he came running with outstretched arms. Oh, my young brothers, he roared, embracing them in turn. Shall we ever meet again in this life? There were tears in his eyes, and he began suddenly pulling at his thick fingers as if he wanted to wrench them off. Excuse great lack of manners. Haddock, in haste, forgotten, he blurted in his bad Chinese. But here's a souvenir of poor Lama Thunderbolt. Saying this, he pushed on Christian's thumb the ring he had had on his little finger. To Big Tiger, he gave the one from his middle finger, but it would not fit even his thumb. No good fit, moaned Thunderbolt. But Moonlight trotted off, and Big Tiger and Christian had to follow. Seya bona, roared Thunderbolt mournfully. Seya bona, cried Damien Surin without emotion, and the cry was taken up on the watchtower and all the battlements.